lots to talk about. We are back from Milwaukee and about ready to take off for Canton, Ohio for the final shootout of the ACL season. With Bernie Neighbors, I'm Jeff McCarriger, and welcome to Borderline. First things first, hey, had a great time on ACL Live this week. That was so much fun to do. I mean, we were even talking this week, you know, maybe we do Borderline Live and start doing some chat stuff. And
I think at least once a month, right? Like once a month, maybe, just to get people involved and see who's watching. I mean, I guess it's a little different because ACL Live goes directly to Facebook and people kind of, that's where people follow it. I don't know exactly how we do it. We'd have to find a way to get on Facebook. I think
so ours doesn't do that.
The cornhole world. I don't think ours goes directly to that. I mean, I think we could do it, right? I mean, ours goes everywhere, I guess. We're more of a podcast.
As long as it goes to Facebook or to YouTube, we could probably, because not that it's easy to do, but I didn't realize that it was that easy to do. I mean, basically we just hit go live and had to run some commercials and we got to get our
numbers up on YouTube, man. I don't know why we're not very successful on YouTube.
I think because we started as a podcast, you know, that I think people have just gotten used to just downloading our show like they download any other podcast.
Right.
Because I know there's a lot of people a lot of our players too and staff will listen to it while they're driving.
Right.
So that obviously means that they've downloaded it. But yeah.
Or they're going to Spotify Apple. Yeah, they're not going like to YouTube to watch. Yeah, I'm with it.
We can tell everybody right now. Everyone who's downloading this week,
watch it everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting. We've talked about this before. Like, I mean, as far as our numbers, how are we judged? I mean, if we're judged on YouTube numbers, then we need to start driving all of our audience to YouTube. But if we're judged on downloads, then we want people to keep downloading.
I think we're judged on me and you, Jeff. To be honest,
I'm just being good guys.
I mean, we're different. We're not, look, we've talked about this. One of the things that makes our show a little bit different is we're not so cornhole specific. Yes, we dabble in that world. We have top 10 lists. We have on the board, off, you know, in the hole, that whole segment now. Yes, we are cornhole centric to a degree, but we'll talk about other stuff. I mean, our world is very different on this show. And I think that it has an appeal that kind of extends beyond cornhole a little bit, where I think most of the cornhole podcasts are designed to go right to the heads, right? Right, mm-hmm. Right to the old school cornhole community, which I hope watches and listens to us as well. But I think there is more to our show as far as, you know, I'm going to complain about planes, right? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like we're going to talk about different stuff. I mean, I think that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah, and we do from time to time make comparisons and talk about other sports. But right now we don't because there is nothing on.
Unless you're a baseball fan.
Are you not still a baseball
fan though?
I really can't watch it every night. I really can't. You know, I will watch it. I'll watch big series, you know, and I'll watch from time to time, but I don't watch nearly as much obviously as I did back when that was my world. But
who was your team growing up? I don't even know that about you. Who was your team growing up?
The Cubs, because, you know, growing up in Iowa City, there's obviously no major, you know, professional sports teams.
Right.
And Chicago was 3.5 hours away. So literally we would take the TV because Harry Carey was on with Steve Stone. And so we would literally take the TV at my buddy's house, Rob Wilson, and his parents' bedroom was on the front side of the house. And we'd always play hot box and catch and everything like that. Outside in the front yard because their front yard was big. So we would take the TV from their bedroom, connect an extension cord to it, open up the window, literally put the TV in the window, turn up the sound so we could listen to the Cubs game while we were outside playing in the front yard. So
awesome.
The Cubs. And then moved to Kansas City, went to Kansas, obviously, and the Royals weren't great. So we really didn't watch the Royals. But in the 90s, who was good? The Atlanta Braves. And because of TBS, I felt like the Braves were on in Kansas more than the Royals were, because really the Royals really, really were not good. I mean, they were.
Yeah, Charlotte, like Charlotte only being 3.5-4 hours away from Atlanta, most of the kids that grew up there were Braves fans.
Right? Yeah.
And TBS. Once late 70s, early 80s cable hits, TBS is always on every cable system.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of became America's team. That was their whole slogan, right? The 80s, they kind of hijacked Dallas's thing and said they were
the Braves were big and in the 90s they were really good in winning I think they only won one World Series every year. And I mean, Mark Lemke was one of my favorites, Javi Lopez, the Clown Dog, you know, John Smoltz. I mean, you know, all those guys back when
I grew up a Yankees fan. How front runner of a guy was that? But It was Willie Randolph, Greg Nettles, Chris Chambliss playing first base, and they had Reggie Jackson running around. I mean,
yeah,
it was
hard not to be a fan
when
of that.
Thurman Munson died. That's how big of a Yankees fan I was when I was a kid.
They were rock stars. I mean, when they traveled, it was like the Rolling Stones. Pre-cable. I mean, they were literally rock stars.
And it's pre-cable. And so you had the one game on NBC a week, right?
Yeah.
So who was it? Yankees, Dodgers, Reds. I mean, it was never the Cubs or the Braves It was one of those teams. And so that's who you watched. Cardinals were on a lot, oddly enough. People love the Cardinals for some reason. It's a big baseball town, I guess.
Yeah, they're not quite America's team, but they do have a very good national following. But again, going back to Iowa, it's all because of TV. Like you're saying, you were watching the Yankees because of who was on TV in Charlotte. Well, I mean, we were lucky because we had WGN, and so the Cubs were literally on every. And this is actually before they had night games, so the Cubs were literally on every afternoon when we came home from school.
Yeah,
it was because of WGN.
We had WGN, but for some reason, you know, I guess because of the...
Well, you're so far away, though. I was at least three and a half hours away. So.
Yeah, and the same thing. That's why people love the Braves. Everyone that I grew up around were mostly Braves fans. And then the occasional person like me that, you know, well, they're terrible. I'm going to root for the team that wins. How easy is that? Because I was a Steelers fan growing up, right? They were on TV in Charlotte. They and the Redskins were like on TV every weekend, depending on which, if you watched AFC, NFC. But, you know, it's kind of easy to pull. When you're six, why do you pull for some? It's funny, as an Iowa guy, I kind of liked watching Iowa games because they had the same colors as the Steelers when I was like six, seven, 8 years old, whenever they would come on.
Their uniforms like identical.
That's why I grew up
a Cowboys fan, because of the game of the week. You know, I mean, the game of the week in Iowa City wasn't even the Bears or the Vikings because they weren't that great. I mean, the Bears had that good run in the mid-80s, Super Bowl shuffle and all that stuff. But it was the Cowboys who run every weekend with the game of the week. So that's how I became a big Cowboys fan.
Same. I mean, it's TV. If you don't live in one of those cities, that's what's so hard for people that are from those cities. They don't get why people root for teams outside of those. It's like, it's what, you know, if you're our age, it was what was on TV.
Yeah.
That's all TV you had a chance to see. All. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yep. Speaking of TV, to switch gears just a little bit, you brought up a great point on ACL Live that I kind of wanted to reiterate that I just thought of. In talking about TV and having to fit into a window, during ACL Live, you and I got into a good discussion, and I did go back and look at the chat room, and there were some good comments in there from players about the round limited versus first one to 21. And you made the comment on ACL Live that it's made for TV. And it is. And for those who don't know, Bernie brought up a good point. You know, with the NFL and with Major League Baseball, it's a generic window that they broadcast on. There's a pregame show, there's the game, there's a postgame show. It really doesn't matter. You know, whether it's 3.5 hours, whether it's 4 hours, it doesn't matter. The network is going to give them their time. Mm-hmm. With ESPN and with CBS, you know, another reason why the round limited format was derived was because we have to fit our broadcast in a specific 2 hour window. It has to be that way. And this was one of the only ways really to do that. We do get grace periods from time to time. If we come on a little bit late because of lacrosse, you know, or WNBA or something like that, they'll give us, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, on the other side, there's a little bit of cushion there, but normally, I mean, we've got to be in that 2 hour window, and that's mandated by TV. And if people could hear what is going on in my headset at the end of the broadcast,
if people had any,
you would understand how important that is, because one of my biggest jobs is basically getting us on the air, but maybe even more importantly, and Trey knows this because he hears, I think you hear it too, is getting us off on time. Like David or Ryan, whoever is in my ear, and Jeff, you got 30 seconds. Wrap it up. One more thought from Trey, you're done. You know, Jeff, 20 seconds. Hey, 15 seconds. And I've got a closed copy and all this kind of, but we have to be off. By the time he says one, we're done. Otherwise, it gets cut off. So, I mean, I thought that was a good point you brought up in ACL Live.
Well, and like for what you guys do, sometimes in round limit, if they're just blowouts, right, and it happens so fast, or you've got some people that just like to throw real fast, right, we'll end early. And so then you and Trey get stuck having to do these little segments to fill time to kind of get to the 2 hour mark. But if in a game to 21, and it's two great players and they're taking a little time, even though that's why the shot clock came around, to speed games up to fit into those windows. And it's, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say it now. I don't know if it's going to happen, but at some point if we want to get bigger and we want to have, like you say, like personal interest stories, right? If we want all these things in our broadcast, don't be surprised if somewhere down the road we end up with taped programming.
So it fits into a nice little box.
And you play the games at 21 and you can play as long as you want, but guess what's not going to happen? We're not going to see a lot of the match. And that's the problem with, like, once again, with the round limit format, you can watch everything. But, you know, you get these games, like, let's say if Jake Gore and Caleb Batson's 44 or 47 round game would have been on a national television broadcast, everybody else is screwed.
Right.
I mean, you're not, you know, that's going to take up so much of that time. And like you said, we only get so much time. We're not the NFL.
Right.
It'd be cool if we were the NFL and just made a call to New York or, for, in our case, Indianapolis and say, look, we're going over, figure it out. Right.
Well, they've done that to us before where they've cut out, you know, due to time constraints, we move ahead in the action. Yeah. You know, I mean,
well, they'll do that. Yeah. They'll do that on the replays for sure. And it's, I think I as a closer to a purist, I really don't want to see that.
I know.
I would not be surprised if we get to a point where you start seeing these little things on the players and then we get back to the action and it's 11-7.
Right.
Right. You'll see the beginning and then we'll kind of fade away and then we'll come back for maybe some important shots. And you know what I mean? I think we're getting in closer and closer to that point. And if we're being honest, if we can talk about Matt Morantz for a second, coming from the world of World Series of Poker, that's what they did.
Yeah,
right.
For those who haven't met him yet or know him. Yeah. So Matt was basically hired by the league as kind of a executive
consultant almost.
Basically executive producer of our broadcast.
Yeah.
And he comes to the league with a ton of experience, including the World Series of Poker, which was done. And I never knew this until, you know, some conversations with you guys behind the scenes, that's basically how that was shot. All that World Series of Poker stuff was shot ahead of time.
Yeah.
Apparently the broadcasters a lot of times were brought in afterwards to voice certain matches and certain moments because they obviously didn't, you know, it was all pre-recorded and then almost shot like a movie, like we've done a couple of times. We have the players do all the action and then we record our segments and then somebody edits it all together like a movie. So but I never knew that's how the World Series of Poker.
And I don't want to get to that point, but it wouldn't surprise me if we get closer and closer. I don't want to go fully that direction because I think you lose the integrity of the sport. Because as announcers, you can't generate, as good as Trey is, as good as you are, you can't generate real reactions when you know what happened.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
I mean, you can try. It's like Remy. You're acting. But you're acting at that point. You're not. You're not being. You know, it's not, God, my brain. I swear, Jeff, this has been a bad week for my brain. I am forgetting words, everything. It's just, it's not organic. And that's not the word I was thinking of. It's just another word that came, but it's not organic.
Like that word, though.
It's not organic, your reaction.
A good word for
you're faking it. You're acting it. And I just don't want that. But
it's like in basketball, the big thing, and they've done it in football too, Remy broadcasts, where, and they do a lot of them at ESPN. In Charlotte. So what they do is, you know, whatever broadcasters live in Charlotte, they bring you into the studio and you literally watch a live feed of the game. And just like this, you got a microphone in front of you, but you're watching the game on TV and you broadcast as if you were there live.
But at least that's a live product, right?
Yeah. I mean, true. But what I'm saying is it's tough to really capture the moment when you're in a quiet studio and you're instead of being in the arena.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's very tough. I hope at least if we do stuff like that, you guys are there live, right? And we're getting your live reaction to what happens. And then all of this gets spliced. Someone does edit the programming to fit into a window. But I don't know. We'll see. I hate that we might be going down that road because I think it ruins the integrity of a 2021 game, personally.
Yeah. Personally. Well, a lot of it, you know, and I've also, you know, I know that, you know, making this push to get on the sports books has been real for the league as well. You know, really wanting people to be able to live bet. And obviously, if it's pre-recorded, you can't live bet on it. But I don't know how much the league makes off of live betting and off of gambling. So, I mean, there are so many high-level
discussions. It's an onion.
That have to
There's a lot of layers.
Yeah. So I see the argument for both sides. I truly do. And I do love the features. I mean, to be able to play the Jay Rubin feature, to be able to play the Matt Guy, Brett Guy feature, obviously to be able to play the Dayton Weber feature, which was so emotional.
Yes.
What a great moment for him and for the league this past weekend. But I love those features. And you've heard me talking about it for 4 years now. You know, pulling all these stories from all the players, you know, this is what really pulls on the heartstrings and gives people a reason to root. It's just like American Idol. They can all sing, but when you give somebody their background and give them a reason to really fall in love with this person, then it becomes a totally different broadcast.
Right.
So I love that we're doing that.
Hey, guess what? That was a segment we weren't even trying to do.
I know. Every week, right? I mean, that wasn't, I have got a list. A page and a half long, plus a bunch of notes here. And
you're so good, man. You are such a pro.
We haven't even gotten to one yet.
Look, did you see how well yours was written out? And there's mine.
No, that's mine too. Mine's scratched. No, this is typed, but these are some of my notes. And then this is the other.
Yeah, man. Mine's just like, huh? Yeah. Bernie can barely write.
Yeah. I gotcha. Hey, by the way, I love your shirt.
Yeah. Oh, hey, man. Anyone out there, sponsors, cornhole, whatever type of sponsor, you want to send me something? I'll wear it. I'll throw a post out there. I'll wear it on the show. Send us stuff.
Who is that? It says, I can see it says, we the people.
Bust You Up Cornhole, Sam Schiff out of Eastern North Carolina.
Oh, sweet. Awesome.
Yeah. So this is a great shirt for the 4th, by the way. It's going to be my July shirt, apparently.
I have talked to a certain person, Shockings, about wearing their stuff on the broadcast, Shockings, but never really heard anything back, Shockings. So,
and by the way,
I don't know who that could be.
All of this stuff can be sponsored. You can sponsor this show. I actually have a deck. It is prepared, and it's not set pricing. We can work with you. How much you want to be involved, how little you want to be involved, we can make that happen. It's not hard. You do have to contact us, though. We've tried reaching out to people. It hasn't worked real well. Come to us. We will make it happen for you. We will. Shot Kings can be all over what you see around here. Bust You Up Cornhole. All these things can happen.
We are not tied
to any one company.
During ACL Live, you said that somebody said, hey, somebody, there needs to be like actual commercials on this thing. Yeah. Yeah, we know. Yes. Yeah. Anyone wants to buy into it, let us know. It takes two
to
tango.
We are fully aware.
Yeah, all right. Shameless plug. So this is actually a good segue to a topic that I did want to talk about. Do you feel like we need to do, and I know maybe more is a bad word, because I know that Stacy and Trey and the whole league do a lot and have really good relationships with the bag manufacturers. So do we need to do, and again, bad word, I just can't think of anything else, more during the broadcasts and maybe behind the scenes and in social media, on the website, to promote the bag manufacturers? Because follow me with this. Like in NASCAR, right? You know who drives what cars.
They're paying,
you know, and I mean, it's just a part of the fabric of NASCAR.
Yeah,
I mean, I wrote down a few. I grew up. All right, so now people are really going to hate me because I've already said I'm a Cowboys fan. So I was a big Jeff Gordon fan. We all knew that Jeff Gordon drove what? He drove Chevrolet, right? Denny Hamlin. For those of you who live in Charlotte, Denny, he's a Toyota guy. Joey Logano's Ford guy, drives for Team Penske. The Earnhardt.
You want to put a logo next to a name? Is that what you're saying?
Kevin Harvick is a Ford guy. A lot of
you want to put the bag logo next to their name, like when you guys have.
I kind of feel. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. That's why I wrote it down, and I wrote it with a big question mark. So I would love your thoughts on this. But yeah, I mean, I kind of feel.
I think
like
we have too many.
Especially,
I'll give you my opinion. I think we have too many bag people involved. In NASCAR, you have what, four car companies. And, you know, looking up golf balls, you have seven total companies. Now, they have different brands that they put out there, but it's only seven total companies. Football, NFL, you have one. College, you might have two or three. Same with basketballs. Like, it's just we've got way too many. And we have to find a way to get that down like other sports to a very – now, how does that happen? I'm not sure. but we've got way too many at this point. Then you're just spending all your time going through 30 some odd different bag manufacturers. I think it's too convoluted. I think it makes the sport, it makes it look too mom and poppy. And I know that's going to drive people crazy, me saying that, but it makes it look too much that way. It makes it look unprofessional. And
see, I don't mind it. And like when you look at the standings, hey, I just looked at the NASCAR.
We can standings. Agree to disagree.
And under each name, it says Ford, Chevy, Toyota.
But they pay a lot of money for that. They pay a lot of money for that.
Okay, and that's why I'm asking. That's why with a big question mark. I mean, are they paying the money to where
the bag manufacturers are too. The top bag manufacturers are, as everyone already knows, are paying the ACL a fee in essence.
Yeah.
To have their bag stamped and to be able to be used. So I mean, they are paying to be a part of it. So I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with say, all right, here's Tony Smith, Mark Richards, and we've got them both, right before you do the match. And you've got the bag logo somewhere associated with them, but on their on their shirts and on their jerseys, you do have that. And we've done market research through Nielsen, and they've pointed out that the board and the jerseys are the two most valuable pieces to our broadcast.
Oh, absolutely, that doesn't surprise me at all. But and in NASCAR, again, obviously it's all over the car. I mean, if it's a Chevy, Chevrolet is all over the car.
And they have the opportunity to do that. But
I was just wondering, I was just kind of thinking out loud. Well, to myself.
No, I agree with what you're saying. I agree in a way.
Because if we raise the level of consciousness and awareness of the bag manufacturers, all right, you said Tony Smith, contraband, right? And it just says contraband. And Mark Richards, Lucky Bags or just Lucky, right? BG is obviously, those guys are killing it this year. Their players right now are on stage all the time. So if you've got all their players and the BG logo, if we raised more awareness to what manufacturers are associated with these champion players, and that in turn, leads to more bags being sold and more of their merch being sold, maybe more of that money comes back to the league.
That's the interesting
money available for sponsorships for Borderline.
Maybe, I don't know. Or do they just keep the money?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it sounds great. Trickle-down economics sounds great. Does that money come back or does it get pocketed? Does it go to the employees that are working there for higher wages for them? Does it in any way come back to more sponsorships for players or to help television broadcasts? There's no way of guaranteeing that, because my inner thought on that is the vast majority of that, if there was more money, is pocketed by those bag manufacturers.
Yeah,
and used however they see fit. Now,
yeah, maybe so. I don't know. I'd love to know what the NASCAR business model is on something like that. I don't know.
You got to pay the piper with NASCAR. Yeah, you got to pay the piper
with
NASCAR.
Oh, I'm sure. It's obviously much bigger money. than we're talking. But they have a huge TV deal as well, which brings in a lot of money. So
sure.
But with two networks, Fox,
they have real sponsors, which is not real sponsors, but they have a lot of sponsors paying a lot of money. And we're just not there yet.
Yeah, paying huge big boy money. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just saw that. I'm a closet NASCAR fan.
To be honest,
I really watch it quite a bit. So and I just noticed that. And I'm like, gosh, I'm like, I wonder if that would be a good fit for us.
To be honest, but who does it help the ACL at all?
That's something I don't know what the business model is.
I don't think it would help the ACL at all. And that's probably why Stacy's not jumping all over. Like, Stacy, let's be honest.
Well, they probably pay for it. Like you're saying, I'm sure Chevy has to pay a lot to be one of the car manufacturers.
But you couldn't just do it for one. You'd have to do it for all if you were going to do it. I'm actually with you. When you guys have that shot right before the match starts and you've got their faces, why not have the logos right next to them?
Yeah.
Right? Why not?
Even when you go to the website and in the website right now, when you go there, I actually have it pulled up. So when you go to iPlayCornhole.com and you go to the rankings, you go to standings, it just has one Mark Richards, two Alex Rawls, two tied for second Tony Smith. If we just had on NASCAR, when you look at these, it literally will say whoever the driver is and then Chevy, the driver, Ford. So if we had Mark Richards, Lucky.
I would like to know that
Tony
model
Smith,
because that's free advertising.
Justin Byrne Jr., BG, whatever.
I know, I get you. I understand where you're coming from, but I'm wondering what the model is, because that's just free advertising if they're not getting paid for that.
Oh, no, you got to pay for it. Yeah. I mean, especially if it's going to be on, especially if it's going to be marketed via social media and through the website. Yeah, you got to pay for it. I'm not saying we do it for free, but yeah. You know, I just feel like maybe that would be a win-win situation for everybody. But like,
maybe
that's why I put a big question mark, because I'm just talking out of my ass.
No, I like it.
I don't know what the numbers are behind the scenes.
I like where your head's at. I do. I like the idea. I think it would look cool, actually, because I think BG and Lucky, as far as two of them, have great logos. Right.
Oh, I love their logos. The logos are amazing.
Yeah. Right? The merch would look really cool.
How about Lucky?
Next to the scorebud. The scorebud when it's up, like to have their name and maybe a little logo right next to their name, I think would be kind of cool on the screen. But
and fire, I mean the fact that Jason McCannon was able to copyright and manufacture fire bags. I mean, gosh, I don't know. There's just so many really cool. Yeah, I don't want to start. I shouldn't start naming individual ones because I'm going to surely leave out.
Well, there are.
But there's so many good ones.
There's five or six that kind of have dominated the market. But yeah. I'm with you. I like it. I like the idea. I think it would add color to the broadcast in a way. It would add color to the screen, which is never bad for like people.
Yeah,
like
just
me,
another layer.
Oriented. Yeah.
Just another little layer. And you're right. Just visually, it might look good as well. And just raise some interest because people are going to be like, BG,
what's that?
Yeah. Fire, what's that? Cornhole scenario, what is that?
Yeah,
so,
I'm with you.
All right, so speaking of bag manufacturers and players, another segue. One more thing I wanted to get to, and then we'll get to our... it's funny because just before we came on, I said to you, hey, let's do on... off and in right away because I got something I want to talk about. And here we are 30 minutes in and no sight of on off or in yet. So one more topic I did want to hit up with you. And again, in total question form, because I'm just thinking out loud. So Mark Richards, and we talked about this on ACL Live. So Mark has, obviously we all know, comes off this, and for those who just casual fans. So Mark Richards last year had perhaps, and I don't even know if it's arguable anymore, the greatest single season of any single player. Came up with 8 career titles in his rookie year. And so the big question was, can he do it again? Well, that answer is obviously yes, because now he's at 7 already this year. 15 total career titles. He's only been playing for what, a year and what, as a pro, he's only been playing for like a year and 8 months. Yeah. But so here's my point. So he's at 15 right now. Let's say he picks up another one. He'll be playing doubles with Philip this weekend. Let's say he picks up another one this weekend and gets to 16. Let's say he doesn't. Let's say he doesn't win the shootout. He's got 15 right now. Goes to the World Championships. Let's say he picks up 2, maybe 3 in the World Championships, because we have like 9, right? 9 broadcasts that we're doing down there. So let's say he ends with 18, and 20 is the all-time number, right? I mean, that's our Jack Nicklaus right now. I mean, it's 20, Matt Guy, all-time. So here's my question. If Mark Richards gets to 18, right, and let's say he just passes Matt Guy early next year, is he still – do you think that he will be recognized as the greatest player of all time?
Matt? Yes.
No. Do you think Mark Richards
– Matt will –
That was my point. I was sitting. I think about these things in the middle of the night.
Cornhole existed. Look, I work for the.
I think
ACL.
I agree with you. And
cornhole existed in a professional manner way before we got on the scene. And Matt was the dominant player there for over a decade. He's still one of the most dominant players in our world. So it's almost like you'd have to, if you really looked at a total career. And you're being honest with yourself, Matt is the first face on the Mount Rushmore of cornhole, and it's not debatable. It's not debatable. Now, give Mark another 5 to 6 years, and he keeps having years like this, then yeah. I mean, then that debate gets very heavy. You know, it's the LeBron-Michael debate. You know, everyone forgets about Kareem and Wilt, but whatever.
Well, you just kind of answered my second question, because my second question was, if not, what would he have to do? And it's interesting because, like, and I'm putting myself on the spot right now. I'm trying to think of other sports that require accomplishments plus time to be considered one of the all-time greats. You know, I think that's because my gut feeling was the same thing. Even if Mark, with all of his accomplishments, as outstanding of a player as he is, If he passes Matt next year, is it too soon?
And I started thinking, I think he could make the argument that he's up there now with as one of the great ACL players of all time. And as long as, you know, you have to start looking at it. There's a caveat there. And look, you can't be over, like, I work for the ACL. One of my best friends is the owner, but you can't look at things just in that world because the sport existed before we got on the scene. And you have to admit that certain players, because all the players that you see, except for the rookies and a few others, existed then. And so they were all playing then. And some of them that could beat Matt now could never beat Matt then. Right. Everything was a little different, mind you. The bags were different.
Yeah.
Everything was different. Playing styles were different in the modern game. And it's almost as if the game changed. I would say there's a modern game, sure, which is kind of the ACL game. And then there's the game that existed before the ACL. Now, if you take the game in totality, I think Matt sits alone and it's not really close. If you take the ACL modern game, then some really good discussions on who the greatest player is.
It's so funny you say that, because we were having a production meeting. We talked about this before on the TV side. We always meet 2 hours before the television broadcast. And we were joking one day in one of our meetings, I think it was earlier this year. And I actually brought up the point, are we at the point now where we need to have a modern era kind of little asterisk?
Yes, I think we're in it. I think we just created it in the last year or two. I mean, things are changing so fast, but yeah.
I think you could even do it from, I mean, if you want to go back a little bit, maybe what, 2019, 2020? But yes, there is definitely a new modern era of cornhole that maybe should be the caveat for a lot of this stuff.
Bags changed, players changed, players' ages changed. It's a modern game now. It's different. It's spotlighted on national television, where before, you know, it might be a joke on SportsCenter a few years back, and now all of a sudden it's a real thing. Right. So it's I think we're in the modern era and we have to look at things in the modern era. To that point, the fact that Matt Guy can still win a bracket at a national in this modern era with his old style is pretty important.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Still won a shootout this year. You know, we were giving a hard time because they had not won a single shootout. So what does he do?
Yeah.
Wins a single shootout in Topeka. Yeah, that's a great point. No, I love that.
He's still pretty good. he's still really good. I think it has to be weird for him in a way, because he was by far and away the most dominant player in the game for a really long period of time, to now exist in this modern style of game where, you know, like, you don't really see him that often. Like that has to be so weird for him, right? And then so many of these kids, I mean, they still look at him. He's still Matt Guy. Why do you think they're chirping at him? Right? Like, they're not chirping at each other like they are at him, because he's still Matt Guy. Right? So I think you got to give him credit for that.
I've told the story before, but this goes back to the summer of COVID. And I would just get into random conversations with players. And I'm so proud that I've had a chance to watch Matt Guy play. Because when I first came into the sport, I wasn't sure I was going to get a chance to see Matt Guy play because of different circumstances with different organizations. Because I remember specifically sitting down in Las Vegas in a hallway with Damon Dennis and just, you know, sitting down with him and getting a chance to know him and Philip Hayden. Three of us had a great conversation. I mean, it's only us in the hotel, right? It's during COVID. Nobody's there. So, I mean, so who else are you going to talk to? They have to talk to me. I literally have a corner. It's great. No, but they were great. But so, you know, I said to him, I'm like, you know, who do I need to watch? Like, you know, I just asked stupid questions, right? Just trying to get to know these guys. But Damon right away lit up and he's like, man, he's like, until you see Matt Guy play, you've never seen the greatest player of all time. It's basically what he told me. And so then to have Matt start playing in the ACL on a regular basis, you know, in whatever it was, 2021 or whatever.
Yeah,
was great. So I'm so happy, because it wasn't just Damon Dennis who told me that. I mean, there were probably three or four players who during that COVID summer brought up Matt Guy's name. And so
the old school players still revere Matt.
Yeah,
it's this newer generation and this kind of in between generation, and it's so funny because they're all still really young in comparison. But these younger generation, I don't know if they revere him the same way. There's definitely not any fear. And I think some of the older players feared Matt. I think Matt got 5 to 7 points a game just off of that fear. Whereas I don't think the new players care, man. They're like, well, he can't do what I can do. I've never seen him roll a bat. Like, they're like, well, he can't do what I do. Like, and they just have zero fear. Now he's still Matt Guy, you know, and he's, guy at his age playing his style can still win a singles bracket in a national. Come on, man. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. With what all the players can do to him to interfere with his style, and he can still do it. It's crazy.
Still doing it his way.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like Frank Sinatra, doing it my way.
Yeah.
No doubt. And with that, all the kids just turned off the podcast.
Yeah, they did. Like, what are they talking about? Who are these people?
Grandpas are talking about Frank Sinatra. We don't even know who that is.
Dad won't stop talking on TV again.
Are you ready for on, off?
I guess we can try
and
that.
In?
Because I don't know if we have enough time, but we're going to do it. I'm going to get you riled up with mine.
I wonder how this. Okay, good. I wonder how this is playing in the. In the land, on, off, and in. So it's a new segment we just started. We've been doing other variations of it. Again, it's basically where we were right and where we've been really wrong on some certain predictions or thoughts, whatever. So our three are on the board, off the board. So on the board is something that we're kind of trending. Maybe we're right, maybe not. We feel like we're right. On us or off is something that we totally missed, and then in the hole is something that we've nailed. So do you want to get me riled up? Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
I'll try to go first. My off the board, obviously, we just kind of touched on it, was Mark Richards. Going into this year, I felt there was no way with the amount of people that would be gunning for him. Seriously. I mean, just you have that season last year. We promoted the heck out of Mark Richards as an organization. And to be honest, I heard the rumblings. I heard people talking. They were tired of it. They were tired of hearing about Mark Richards. Everyone was. Everyone. And because of that and just the nature of sports in general, I felt there was no way on God's green earth that Mark Richards could have the same kind of year. Wrong.
You really thought that?
The game's too good. The players are too good, and everyone – it's different when you come on the scene and you're looking at targets everywhere. It's completely different when the target's on your back every place you go, and that's Mark Richards now, and he's still winning. And he's still being somewhat dominant about it, actually. And it's crazy, man. That's crazy. And I was way off the board. My on the board and in the hole are the same thing. Drinking at ACL events.
All right. Let me have it.
It has become Josh Keck, our national director, Josh Keck, put up a question on one of the pro page. Actually, I think just one of the cornhole pages on Facebook. What do you think about the ACL getting rid of alcohol? For events, just a question, not saying it's coming, just a question.
Sure.
And it lit up, right? And it was just like, all right, let's see how many people we can get to talk on one thing. I was on the board in the fact that I knew people would be upset by the mere thought of it.
Sure.
But I wasn't in the hole because there were actually a lot of people saying, yeah, let's do it.
Is that right?
I was surprised. I was surprised the number. Now, there were more against it, but I was surprised the number of people and professionals saying, yeah, let's do it.
I was going to ask you, to the Olympics, 50-50 or?
Yeah, it was 65-35 probably would be my guess. But
in favor of still drinking?
Yes.
Yeah.
I really should say I've had this conversation with other people within the organization. I was like, and where I was in the hole was like, I thought you could drink in other sports. I didn't think ours was the only one. And I looked up, professional golfers are allowed to drink. There's no rule prohibiting them from drinking during tournaments.
I didn't know that.
They will be told that they will not be seen. They can't, it has to be kind of like we do. You have to have a cup on a broadcast, right? You can't just throw down a Miller Lite on a broadcast. You can't do that. It has to be in a cup. And I think they tell players, you can't, like, if you're going to be doing that, if you're going to be smoking cigarettes or vaping, you know, you're not going to be on television. And you know they've told them all these things, so it's highly. They don't want them doing it at all. They don't want them vaping, smoking, drinking. They don't want any of that. But there is an understanding that it exists in the culture of the game, right? And so they kind of it's turned a blind eye, the best way to put it. But you'll never see it on television. You will never, ever, ever see a professional golfer take a sip of alcohol on television that you're aware of.
Yeah, I've never.
That you're aware of.
I'm going to watch for it now.
But darts and bowling, it's allowed. Darts, you're going to see it. And so you start thinking, well, if it exists in other sports, right? Like, because I was pretty sure he existed in other sports, and that's why I've always been like, let's keep it as long as it's. However, I think we should come up with really stern penalties. You do anything alcohol related that causes a problem as a professional, you're done for a year minimum.
Oh, I agree with that.
If any like you, we see you on a broadcast. Let's say you win and you're slurring your words or you say something stupid and it's alcohol related, you're done. Yeah. You're done for a year minimum.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You start putting penalties in, maybe that changes people. But then again, you know, the fines and the jail time for drunk driving are pretty severe, and maybe people still do it. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, how much when it comes to the point where it's reflecting bad on the sport.
Well, I think it's kept us from getting sponsored. It's kept us from getting
sponsored. Oh, you think so? Absolutely. Oh, see, now that, all right, because I've got my opinion on it, but maybe that now changes my opinion. My gut feeling is when you bring it up, geez, this could be just a whole topic. Maybe we should table this for next week.
Yeah, maybe right.
We're never going to get through all the rest of this stuff. But yeah. just quickly, my gut feeling would be just leave it. Because as a competitor, you know, if I see my competitor drinking all day, I know by broadcast time that night, which is 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock Eastern,
you would think
he's going to be shit faced, and I've got the advantage. If I'm Mark Richards, and I've got somebody, and I've got player XYZ who's been drinking all day, hey, go for it, bud, go for it. I'm going to kick your ass on the court.
Well, that leads sober. Yeah, that leads into our drug policy and the Adderall question.
Yeah, that's again. That's
our sport is replete with Adderall usage, and I'm sure not everyone out there taking it has a prescription.
I saw Trey's tweet about that. That's really going to be enforced next year, I think.
I think it's tough because
Trey tweeted about that.
All these kids under 25. You tell me a kid under 25 that doesn't have an Adderall prescription. I mean, seriously, yeah,
just for my kids as friends, I know it's
right. And so you can't go and tell someone your doctor doesn't know more than we know. You can't do that, yeah. And we're trying to do that. I find that to be an impossibility to chase down every physician no way. So
no.
If they're going to be allowed to do that, then you have to allow alcohol usage.
Unless it's a drug policy, but yeah.
I don't know. We could talk about this forever because it's coming. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know of any Olympic
the whole drinking sports. Thing though. I mean, the Adderall thing, we'll table that for another time, but the whole drinking thing. I mean, if it's like I just gave you my opinion on it, but if it is affecting business and affecting the revenue coming into the sport and growing the sport, man, that's a whole new topic now. So now I'd be able to see the argument for prohibiting the use of alcohol during.
Yeah, there's no way,
if it's prohibiting the sport from growing and getting revenue and being and therefore increasing the payouts for me as a player, if I was a player. Yeah. That's a whole different discussion, in my opinion.
And there's no way we get to the Olympics with alcohol usage.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Yeah, or really drugs at all, right?
Yeah. That's
heavy.
That is heavy.
Boy, that makes mine, we should just skip mine. Mine are pretty dumb, actually. I mean, an 8-year-old could have a discussion about mine now.
Well, now I know.
I'll give you mine, but geez, we should just end the show right now. That was so good. See, thanks, Bernie.
Yeah, that's me.
All right. I'll give you mine quickly, only because we're running out of time. But yeah, these are stupid. All right, so my on the board is learning how to win. I feel like an idiot now.
This is actually drugs, huge.
We're talking alcohol, and now I'm going to mine.
No, this is actually just as big for the players, I think.
All right, I'll do mine just briefly, and then we can do our top tens and get out of here. All right, so my on is learning how to win. And I've talked about this. I remember when I was a minor league broadcaster working up in Greensboro, up in your neck of the woods with the Greensboro Bats, and they were affiliates of the New York Yankees. And the Yankees would specifically draft high schoolers and college kids who were what? Winners. And I don't just mean winners as people. I mean winners of championships, winners in tennis when they were high school, winners in football, you know, winning state championships in football, basketball, baseball. They won. They won championships or, you know, conference championships or national titles in college. They felt like there was a premium on players who knew how to win because they thought that was a special trait. And I think it's so true. I actually really agree with that. It's It's hard to learn how to win. You can be good, you can be great, but to win at a sport, and especially to win a championship, it's really difficult to do. You have to learn how to do it. Mark Richards, two names, and I'll even go to the female side, Cheyenne Bubenheim. These are two people who have learned how to win. They know how to get to that next level. They know how to win championships. Fisher Hamilton and Yeti Irwan, I think you'd agree with me, they're learning, aren't they? They are now learning how to win. Yeti won shootout number 8 last year in California. She got a taste of it. She's learning how to win. She got a big weekend in Milwaukee, winning the women's singles automatic bid and in Super Bowl. You know, sure. I know it's Super Bowl, but still, a couple of wins. She's learning how to win. Fisher Hamilton, 17 years old, right? He's learning how to win. The Yankees love winners. They love kids who can win championships. I do too. And, you know, so that's my on the board. We are watching players learn how to win, learn how to be champions right in front of our eyes. And I absolutely
love
it. My off the board, and this may seem weird, but Jay Rubin and Jordan Power. Honestly, and you know I love them. We talk about them on the broadcast all the time. I really have great conversations with these guys. But for some reason, it just wasn't clicking this year, right? I mean, Jay is ranked just barely inside the top 40 in singles. Jordan Power, barely just inside the top 90 in singles for some reason. And as a doubles team, for some reason, just wasn't really clicking. And I wasn't sure. You know, there's all kinds of rumors of people changing partners already. I don't know if that includes Jay and Jordan or not. But, you know, I wasn't sure if they're going to be able to do it again the rest of the year. So I was off the board on that, because then what happens? Boom. I mean, they just click in Milwaukee and crush it. I mean, they crushed it. So that's my off the board. I totally missed on that one. And then my in the hole, just briefly, I don't want to bore everyone with this because we talked about an ACL live. We've talked about it on the show. I've talked about it with you. I've talked about it with Trey. I've talked about it with Stacy. We've got to take the game to the people. We have to. We can't be stuck out in Ramsey, Minnesota at some youth organization, you know, whatever. I get it that there's money, you know, involved in this kind of stuff. It's just my opinion. We can't go way out in the middle of 45 minutes away from downtown Miami in some amphitheater and some empty parking lot, and there's nobody there. Like, we have to take the game to the people. When we take the game to the people, we win. And we did that absolutely. We took the game to Summerfest, and the people loved it. They're cheering, they're yelling, they're getting swag. It was an amazing moment. No one ever goes to a big cornhole event like that and walks away saying, well, that sucked, and I'm never going to watch that again. They love it. Everyone who sees it loves it. Whether it was Nashville 3 years ago or it was Summerfest in Milwaukee, I don't care if we take it to a mall. Sometimes it's got to be outside, and I get it. I get it. It's a risk. But if it has to be that way sometimes, and sometimes we get canceled, it happens. But we've got to take it to the people, because everyone wins when we do that. So that's my in the hole.
Can never get canceled with our TV deal. Can never take that chance. Just can't do it. Can't take that.
Well, then we just fill with borderline for an hour.
No, you can still take it to the people, but you can't. I mean, there's covered ways.
Well, there's tents. Yeah, I mean, there's tents.
Yeah, there's covered ways to take it outside. I'm with you.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
Exactly what we did at Summerfest. So.
Yeah.
All right. Real quick. So we got like 2.5 minutes left. You ready for our top 10?
Yeah. Do it at the same time. Ready?
Yeah. I mean, my ready. That'd be fun to do at the same time. Go ahead. Mine's pretty much the same. So
mine changed a little bit, oddly enough.
Okay.
I got Matt Guy in my top 10.
Oh, and wow.
Just talking about, you know, he also had another chance to win the last Open. He's there again. He's won a shootout. He's still winning, you know, at a pretty high level. He's still playing really well. Give the man his due, right? Yeah. Even with the way the game changed, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Devin Harbaugh, number 9, stays there. You know, number 8's a weird number for me. It doesn't necessarily follow in ranking, but you brought them up. Jay Rubin. If you look at numbers and people's PPRs and all of that throughout the season, he's one of the best in the world. He just hasn't had results that have followed along with that. Had a great weekend. Way to go, Jay Rubin. Yeah, you're my number
trending.
8.
He's trending. I agree with it.
7, Jay Gore. 6, JBJ, Justin Burton Jr. 5, Alex Rawls. 4, Caleb Batson. 3, Fisher Hamilton. 2, Tony Smith. Number 1, Mark Richards.
Okay. Justin Burton Jr. Wow, outside your top 5. All right. Here we go. My top 10, number 10, Jamie Graham, number 9, Devin Harbaugh, number 8. I kind of like your idea about number 8 being kind of a wild card. We've talked about him, I feel like, all season long, and he's always on the outside looking in. He's an energetic, exciting player. And you know what? I'm going to throw him in there because he's a tough kid, and he's showing that he can win, and he won a national on the double side. Jacob Trzynski. I'm going to throw him in at number eight.
Sure.
Number seven, Alex Rawls. Number six, Jake Gore. And then my top five, Fisher Hamilton. Maybe could have bumped him up a little bit, but Fisher Hamilton at five, Justin Burton Jr. at four, Caleb at three, Tony Smith at two, and Mark Richards at one. Caleb Batson, I almost dinged him because he doesn't have a shootout win this year, but he's playing so good, so I kept him at number three. But all right, dude, that's it.
Wow.
We are out.
Top 10 is tough, man. I don't think people realize how hard a top 10 is until they try to do one.
It's even harder on the double side. That's why we're not doing doubles.
It's crazy.
All right, man. We will see you in Canton.
Yeah. See you in
last one.
Yeah. Last shootout. Let's go. Yeah.
All right. Hey, thanks everybody for watching. We'll see you guys next week.